This is a joint work with Baptiste Gourdin, Shinmei Sonnan, and Aristo Bojinov. And today what I want to talk about is embedded device insecurity. But before I can do that, I probably have to tell you what kind of... what kind of device I am referring to. So some of them you probably know, like printers. Well, so printers, switches, routers, IP camera, but also the one you have for storing, such as NAS, and IP phones, and more surprisingly, probably things like photo frames and what we call light out management, which are these little things you have in high-end laptop or servers that allow you to power on your server and change the fan speed and so forth. All of them have something in common, which is they are using a web interface to be configured. The reason for that is probably because it's easier for user, which are already used to use a browser, and it's cheaper for vendor, because all they have to do is ship a web interface rather than shipping a software which is going to run on Linux, OS X, and Windows and have a ton of bugs. So before I delve into why, what we found and why we think they are insecure and what we can do about it, I have to do a sort of a reality check with you guys. When I speak with a lot of people over the last 2 years, and I ask them where on the scale of our huge priority list of security, where are the embedded devices? And many people actually put it into the long tail as it doesn't seem very interesting and not very useful and so forth. Let me show you a map of San Francisco. This is San Francisco, and every red dot is a Wi-Fi access point. There is actually more than 100 million Wi-Fi access points over the world. If you compare to the 92 million web servers in the world which are connected to internet, there is actually more web server designed to configure Wi-Fi than there is web server designed to serve page on the web. And I'm not even speaking about switches and printer and photo frame and so forth. At the very least, we have about twice more embedded web interface than we have a server connected to the internet. So I will argue with you that actually, if we should place device security somewhere really high on our curve of research and like really use as with people. You might not connect to it often, but they are online all the time. When you have a router, your web interface is up 24/7. And people might dismiss that and say, this kind of device that I have, like this one I have on my home, in my home for like the last 2 years, is actually infected with a virus. So I basically put a my own written code, injected my own written code into this one. And what it does, it actually steals the photo which is inside this one, but also is able to steal the Wi-Fi key that it's connected to. So this is the one I have at home to remind me that I have to work on this. But all of these I can use as a stepstone. For instance, if you are browsing the internet, and then you configure your device for, I don't know, adding new files to your NAS, and then you go to the New York Times, then the attacker might be able to inject to you a code which is going to infect the device in turn. And once the device is infected, every time now you access the device, it's going to run the code inside your browser, which is behind the firewall, and it's going to be used to attack your local network. So when we started to look at this problem, we quickly realized that there is a recipe for disaster here. First, when we started with like a few devices, about 5 or 7, we realized quickly that first, people are sometimes using standard web technology, like standard web server, but some of them actually even reuse malware code. So I'm more surprised, I'm not going to tell you the brand, but one brand actually pulled out of the internet a malware code which has a very small web server written in C++ and actually use that as their own web server. They all have their own very custom web application stacks which use via CGI. Some of them are written into C, notably for Linksys and Cisco. And overall, they have a very weak security team, maybe because these guys are more from the embedded device community, which are more focused on building product rather than doing with all the mumbo jumbo we do on web security. So the reason, another reason for this disaster is that it's a very, very fast moving industry. A lot of vendors compete on having more features. For instance, this photo frame can play video, images, fetch a photo from Flickr, Facebook, and so forth, and they keep adding new features all the time. So if you add more and more features, you have less time to test them, and as a result, you have more and more, you have a broader untested attack surface. And finally, there is a ton of interactions because you have to be able to plug SSD card and to display to the screen, and you even have speaker on this one. So all of these give you interactions that actually have an unintended effect. The first 2 weeks, I was very hopeful and say, well, some of the vendor might know and have this right. And this is like a Kodak photo frame. You have it on the bottom left. And this page is secure. I tried everything I could think of, every input I can think of, none of them did work. And I was like, okay, so maybe we can draw a line and say some vendors are good, some of them are not that good, and there is hope. Well, not quite. Actually, they roll out a feature which is I need to pull out a photo from the web. And this one is not escape, so you can actually store a XSS in this one. So the real truth, over 2 years, my solely conclusion about security, about embedded device security, is this one. I found vulnerability in every device I did test. No matter which brand, no matter which device it is, I always was able to find at least a single vulnerability. I would have been happy to be defeated, but currently it's a streak of 2 years testing stuff and keeping having and finding vulnerability in all of them. That's how bad it is. So, this talk could be about these insecurities, so what kind of vulnerability we found, and also what we think we can do about it, which is WebDroid, which is a new framework which actually should help developers to build something which will prevent them from shooting themselves in the foot or hanging themselves by having being secure by default. So let me tell you about how we did the audit and how we came to reach the conclusion that we needed to do something. We did an audit in multiple steps. Every time we were focused on three main directions. The first one was we tried to focus to get as many brands as we can to see if it's an industry-wide problem or if it was like a brand-specific problem. Maybe some brand would have get it right, some brand might have get it wrong. Then we also did focus on having as many esoteric devices as we can, from printers to photo frames to even power switch. And so we tried to really see if some kind of device were more secure than other. So sure enough, the routers and Wi-Fi access points are sort of more secure, but they're still vulnerable. And we also try to be creative and try to find new kind of attacks and exploit specific vulnerability we found in specific devices. Like if you have file systems, then we might try to mess up with a file. If you have a photo frame, we try actually to steal the photo and so forth. Overall, we went to 8 categories of devices. We tested more than 16 brands, and we tested more than 30 devices. And overall, I probably reported more than 50 vulnerabilities to the cert. If the cert had actually had a bug bounty, I would probably would be able to retire by now, but they don't have it one yet. And you might, when you see this, you probably don't realize how much space this device take. Let me show you what my desk look at the end of the day. That's how much space it actually takes physically. That's my desk. And I have to clean up everything when I'm done with my testing. So brand, very, very big names like Dell, Cisco, SMC. Some of them you might not heard of, like Buffalo, which is specialized in NAS, or Intel for the Lightout management system. All of these brands are vulnerable. There is not a single brand which is actually doing better than another. I would be happy to say so, but from my point of view, all of them have problems. And just to give you like a glance of how we try really to test multiple devices from multiple brands if we can, and really try to get like as many coverage as we could. And we found vulnerability into all of them. So if you have a black square, it means that we found multiple instances of the same thing. And white mean we only found one instance of each kind of vulnerability by kind of device. mainly because one time we have only one IP phone and one printer. I'm pretty sure if I have multiple printers, it will be black all over the place. We tested for various things like XSS, CSRF, XCS, which is cross-channel scripting, which are the standard stuff we can test for web security. File management system, can we actually steal file without you knowing about it? And authentication problems such as default password, or you don't enforce verification on the password, and so forth. One thing which is really important to realize about embedded devices is, sure enough, they are standard web security vulnerabilities, but the thing you can do with them is pretty crazy. You can actually leverage the device capability to do things you can't do on a standard web server. So to illustrate this, I'm going to run you through like the two or three most interesting attack we came up across with, just to show you how having more capability on the device gives the attacker more leverage. We're in a security conference, and despite not having, and we all know that web is bad and WPA is good, right? We all know that, right? So you should use WPA because it's not broken, blah, blah, blah. Well, even if you use WPA, most of the network are broken. The reason for that is, well, your key is still stored via a web interface. And now guess what? Your web interface is broken. And when I say your web interface, I mean we went through 8 different brands. We went to Fry's and buy one router for each brand we can find of, and we try to steal the WPA key from these guys. And guess what? In 8 out of 8 times, we were able to steal your WPA key. So how good is an encryption if from a web page you can steal the key? Not very good. And you might object that, well, you can only do it in a local network. Well, not quite true, because once again, if I'm able to inject a malicious ad in the New York Times, then my ad would be able to post data to my router because I'm already inside the firewall. I might not be able to read it if I don't have a web vulnerability, but if we find the right vulnerability, you are able to actually read the content of it and steal the content of it, which is actually your WPA key. So the way it works is the attacker is going to show you an ad, and the ad is going to ship to you a JavaScript, which is going to run inside your network. So by that time, you're already inside the safe network. So the firewall is useless. And then our JavaScript do a bunch of scanning and try to figure out what is the IP of the router. And JavaScript can do that because it's actually meant to connect to other web applications. So it's going to eventually find out which IP you are using. And from there, we're going to do a bunch of fingerprinting by trying to embed various images and trying to test various ports. So we have a signature for each device we know. And sure enough, we will be able to know which device you have. Now we look at our payload database, and we're going to use our payload to inject a XSS into the routers. And the XSS basically might be on one page, which is not the one where there is a WPA key. In the SMC case, we found a vulnerability into the domain name. So in the domain name, you were able to inject almost whatever you want. So here we actually embed this code. And this code does something very simple. It just opens an iframe within the same origin, which contains the page with the WPA key. And then all it has to do is just read the value, and then you have to ship it to the attacker. And that's it. That's over. Your WPA key is over in the internet, and all your security and crypto goes bye-bye. To see it in real time, this is a prototype we wrote with Baptiste. It works with multiple brands. So what it does, it actually fingerprints the browser to load the right library, and then fingerprints the device, scan it, and then we're going to have to wait for the reboot because it's a stored XSS. And after 20 seconds, the device reboots. We re-include the router in an iframe because none of them, of course, do clickjacking defense. And then it's going to steal my key, and it was able to actually locate where the router was using the Google API before it was patched in June. So, and here you go. This is actually where I live close by before I change my router, but that's how it is. So now I have your WPA key. I can even get your locations. And so I'm inside your network. Another very interesting thing is CSRF has not, like many people discard CSRF as not a big deal on standard web server. Now, try to see what we can do if you want to have a CSRF on the switch. A switch is a very cool device equipment because it actually helps you to control your network and everyone speak to it. Now, what happens if the administrator just happened to look at the switch statistics and at the same time browse the page where the attacker is? Well, I can send a CSRF attack. My CSRF is not about adding stuff to the switch. It's just to say, I really love one of your functionality. Can you please reboot? And if you reboot the switch, well, the switch is offline. And if the switch is offline, well, your entire network is offline. So single CSRF and you have a massive DDoS inside a corporate network. A last example, which I really love, is the IP phone. IP phone are actually configured by a web interface again, and what you can do is you can actually use the SIP feature to actually call, and instead of saying your name, you actually inject through the caller name a script. And what this script is going to do is, next time the administrator look at the call log, is going to execute a payload. And this payload can do very interesting things, like rerouting your phone to a paid line, intercepting your call by sending it to your own proxy, and so forth. So you can actually hack the OIP system by just a simple call with the right script inside it. Okay, that's the one thing you have to have targeted exploitations. Now, if you want to step up your game and just do massive exploitation, what you can do is look at this kind of NAS, which by popular demand have BitTorrent to download your favorite Linux distribution every day, from your NAS. And with that, what we can do is we can actually create a payload which is going to have a famous distribution name or maybe a famous name, movie name. And I hide it inside it, a payload which is going to be executed. Then all we have to do is ship it to a tracker, the popular one with a ship. And then when people are going to connect to it, what happens is they're going to download the payload and the script is going to be executed on the interface of the NAS. And now the attacker is going to control one of them. But if you have multiple NAS, there is, I think, 300,000 of this guy on the net. Well, you're going to have a massive exploitation of them. So now you have your own botnet with a single torrent exploitation. So here is a definition. Here's what it looks like. And here I actually redress the UI to write XSS attack on the UI. I could have also simply redress the UI so you would never see that I have a payload in it and it would have lived forever. So that's why we think it's a big deal. And surprisingly, it doesn't get enough attention, we think, about research on embedded device security. There was also a good work by Sid Stam and Marcus Jacobson on how to actually reconfigure routers to change the DNS name, so you can actually now have DNS reforming, so it's redirect to your own DNS. And there also a lot of work last year on how to use to mess up with routers to actually be able to access private LAN from the internet. So at that point, we realized that we were thinking very hard and discussing what can we do about that. And then we were thinking and thinking, and we were playing with our cool Android phone, and we say, what about a phone is not that different from a embedded device? It's run on Linux, it's an embedded device, and actually do everything that a IP camera can do. It has a camera, or it do exactly what a NAS do, it has file management. So if we can build something which run on Android, maybe we can actually use it and tell people, well, you should use this, and this might help you not get shot in the foot by yourself. So this is what is WebDroid is. WebDroid is our idea on how we can help people to secure their interface. So it's basically a framework which is a web server and also a way for you to interact with the web server. And it's an interesting design space because embedded devices don't have the same constraint like a web server, which are used to serve web page on the internet. First, it's almost mono user. You don't have like 1,000 people looking at your IP camera unless you have a real problem, which is need to be addressed somehow. Performance are not that critical. If you have to wait 100 milliseconds to actually display a page, that's fine, because you don't use it very often. And we have to deal with limited resources, but that's okay. ARM7 and ARM9 are pretty powerful for just serving a page. And the last thing is, we have a clean slate. No one actually built one yet, so we can actually do whatever we want and be make our own decisions and looking inside what we know, try to avoid common pitfall. So in a way, it was a very clean space where we had a lot of room to focus on security. So our big plan was, let's create a framework which works on Android, so it's in Java. You don't have to add a new PHP, Android, Python, or so forth. You just rewrite everything into Java, which also prevents the buffer overflow. And you focus on security and not performance. Forget about performance. It's not useful. Just if you have to make a decision, security over performance all the time. And same thing, it's always owned by default. If you want to remove a security feature, you have to be explicit as, I don't want to have anti-clickjacking defense. Clickjacking defense are enabled by default. If you don't want them for any odd reason, then you have to disable them explicitly. Everything is owned by default. And you can view our framework as a firewall where we actually try to sanitize input and at the input stage and at the output stage where we can actually also do a lot of stripping, and we had a ton of headers to prevent clickjacking and so forth. And we started with Android as starting point, I said. And actually, we did develop on this guy. So basically, my web server, I use it every day. It's on my my phone, and I use it to share photo with my friend. So basically, I use it all the time, so I know how practical it is, and that's how I do usability testing on it. And you can download it for free, of course, if you want to do it as the same. So here's all the security feature. I can't go through all of them, but for instance, we try to add as many things as we can think of. If you have another idea, happy to add it. They are all in the paper. For instance, for anti-clickjacking defense, we believe that if you have an application on the phone, there is no reason for anyone to frame it because there is no obvious case for that. So you have the X frame options, which is do not frame me, and we also add JavaScript. And this is done at the output time. So when the framework receives a page from the developer, we add it after him, so he actually have no way to remove it by messing up with his code. Same thing, we do under the authentication by ourselves. So we do the cookie tracking and the authentication registration within the framework. So we make sure that the passwords are encrypted and they use slow hashes and they use salt, so they don't have to come up with their own authentication scheme, which is going to be messed up. And we also have SSL by default. No reason, actually, SSL is not that bad on a device, like an Android phone. You can probably don't see my phone, so I'm going to show you two screenshots. This is what you see from the phone. You know that your web server is running and which application I run. And on the right side, you can see which security feature are available. And as you can see, by default, we restrict the access to the web server to local network only. The reason for that is we don't see why you want to put it on the internet. If you want to do it, you can. It just, once again, it's by default. You have to specify that I want to order it from everywhere. Performance-wise, well, we tested two things with the Apache benchmarks tool, which is like the standard way to do that. We are able to serve about on this, I think it's a 1 GHz Snapdragon CPU. We're able to serve about 15 requests by second when we have 13 concurrent access, which is like 15% less than if you don't have any security feature, but overall it's still usable, so we don't think like adding all the security is going to be a hurdle there. We also look at how long it takes to process one request, and it turns out that you also take a 10 to 15% hit, and you have to take like 5 or 6 milliseconds more to process it, which is not a big deal. So that's what WebDroid is. It's available online for free, and we hope people are going to use it, and we are going to try to go back to every manufacturer we have discussion about their embedded devices and try to tell them to use it. For instance, we were testing, I didn't put this in the slide, but we were starting to test TV. For those who don't know, your TV now have also web interface, so we hope that at the end, people will converge to one framework, whether it's ours or a new one which will be better than ours, and start to use that so we don't have this kind of dumb vulnerability into every embedded device, which are also very hard to update. And I will give you a big thank you. And that's pretty much it. One last thing I need to add before question is I will, and with all the team, we want to thank Sam King, which was our shepherd, which actually did a lot of work for us. This guy is amazing. He actually, I think, read the paper 5 times, line by line, and actually take a lot of his time to help us out. So thanks to him, and thanks a lot to the Usenix program committee, which spent a lot of time actually helping us out. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to take them. Thanks.
So maybe I have missed, since no one is asking, I ask a quick question. So does WebDroid serves as a, so how do you bridge the gap with all these existing devices are being
So they will have to install Android.
But Sorry?
They will have to install Android, but all of them use already ARM CPU, so they can actually port, can actually run Android on most of them.
Okay.
Like we have a prototype where we have Android running on a router and it works perfectly well.
Okay.
So it's possible.
Hi, Mike Ryan. I was just wondering, I didn't see if you looked into DDWart or OpenWart, the open source firmwares for certain routers. I mean, as a group of security conscious people, I think a lot of people around here might run them, and I know I certainly do.
No, I did not. I did not look at them. That's a good point. I never thought of it. I just look at what vendors were doing. But yes, it's a good thing to actually try to see how much vulnerability they have.
So there are actually some Buffalo routers right now that ship with DDWart, so you can kind of look at it as a special case of a vendor router at this point.
Okay, so that's a challenge for being not find one without bugs. Yeah, okay, that's a good point.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks.